Hi, how are you?
I am so good. How are you?
I'm great. I'm back on American soil. I'm glad to see it didn't turn into The Handmaid's Tale while I was gone.
You're looking tan.
Welcome to Cults of Our Lives. I'm Hallie George.
And I'm Stassi Serretta. This is our first time seeing each other in this country together since
it's like January. 6 months ago, yeah, something like that. We are here to talk about the Westboro Baptist Church as our cult of the week.
Actually, the next 2 weeks. This thing literally made me, like, nauseous.
Oh, absolutely. I get a little choked up if I read about this too long. I get very upset.
This is going to be a very emotional episode for the both of us, I think, just because it's very awful. Yeah, so for those of you who don't know the Westboro Baptist Church, like my mother, it is that group of people who are always picketing funerals.
Not just funerals, but we'll get into
everything.
That.
They, like, picket the funerals of, like, dead babies.
Famous people, people who've been killed in action in the armed forces.
Yes, and gay men who have died of AIDS. They're the ones who always have the signs that say, God hates fags. Even saying that is...
And I'm just gonna not be saying that word because it really upsets me.
That's the one time we're gonna say it. Just to get it out there, and that's what this group is known for. But they do say it all the goddamn fucking time.
I am going to say that for the rest of these, I'm going to just say the F word, and that is the F word that I am referring to.
Yeah, we'll say fuck freely.
Yes, I have no problem with fuck. Fuck, cunt, cocksucker, I say all of that.
Twats. I love saying twat.
Yeah, but so yeah, we don't say that word because it's a slur, and their signs say God hates F words.
Same-sex parents doom kids.
Thank God for dead soldiers.
Yeah.
Some real winners.
God hates you.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's just everybody. That's like a real all-encompassing anyone who walks by. Before they started making these incredibly charming signs, we're going to go back to 1931, Topeka, Kansas. So right smack dab in middle America there. The East Side Baptist Church.
Which still exists today.
Still exists today. Founded a branch in Topeka, Kansas. In 1954, they hired Fred Phelps as an associate pastor. And then the next year, they promoted him to the head of the new West Side Church, Westboro Baptist.
Yeah.
And he promptly went rogue.
He was born in Meridian, Mississippi in 1929 to his parents, Fred and Catherine Phelps. So his dad is a railroad policeman, and I didn't know what that was, but so I looked it up, and that's just a guy, like a police officer who protects the railroad from, like, vandalism and assault and terrorism. And he's a very devout Methodist. So when Fred is six, his mother dies of esophageal cancer when she's only 28 years old.
Oh, that's too bad.
Isn't that awful?
Yeah.
When Fred is 15, his dad remarries a divorcee named Olive Briggs. Isn't that a cute name?
That sounds like a character in like a Pushing Daisies.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That's like a Pushing Daisies kind of name. So Fred is a smart student. He's an Eagle Scout. And in 1946, he graduates high school and receives an appointment at the U.S. Military Academy at West Point. But decides instead he's going to pursue his religious calling after he goes to a tent revival meeting. Hallie, you're a smart girl. What is a tent revival meeting?
Well, the tents that pastors use, it usually meant they would go from town to town and preach under the tents. And they'd be like, I'm here to spread the word of God. And then they would pack up their tent and leave, but people would all gather under it. It was almost like a collapsible church.
Yeah. So, tent revivals were, like, really important. I think very Southern. It's a very Southern
tradition.
It's
a big Bible Belt thing.
Yes. So it's basically like a big meeting in a tent for members of the Christian church, and they also like get new converts this way, blah, blah, blah. And tent revival meetings, I've heard about a little from like my choir teacher, because she's from the South, and she's like, oh yeah, like people come and there's a lot of singing, and like it's like a whole big to-do. So at one of these tent revival meetings, he gets a religious calling and decides that's how he's going to spend his life. So at the age of 17, he's 17, and he gets ordained as a Southern Baptist minister.
Is there an age limit on that?
I don't know.
Because I know they have those videos online of, like, the 5-year-old preacher or whatever.
What?
It's this video. It's, like, a little kid. He's in, like, kindergarten, and he just, like, walks back and forth on the stage with his microphone and, like, spits out entire Bible verses.
Oh,
and
Jesus.
It's very weird, but he's, like, a preacher.
I would hate to be that kid's babysitter.
Oh, yeah, no, that's a barrel of laughs right there.
So he moves to Tennessee and attends what is now known as Bob Jones University, BJU. And
how could he possibly have gone to a school that has a blowjob innuendo in its title?
Do you know about Bob Jones University?
No.
It's like a very, very, it's like one of the most religious conservative colleges in this country. He refuses the West Point appointment that his dad worked really hard to get him. He abandons his family's Methodist faith and the fact that his dad remarried a divorcee. All of these three factors lead him to start this lifelong estrangement between his father, his stepmother, and his sister. To the point where his family would send his, like, new family, his actual, like, wife and children and stuff, like, they'd send them cards and letters and, you know, for Christmas and their birthdays and whatever, and he would return all of them to his original family unopened.
What a bitch.
How, like, what?
That is some next level ostracization there.
That's just fucking rude.
So, as you can see, he's a really pleasant and chill guy.
He drops out of BJU in 1948, moves to California to become a street preacher, and he attends John Muir College in Pasadena, 1951. Time releases an issue, and that runs a story on him, and about how he lectures students about, quote, sins committed on campus by students and teachers, including, quote, promiscuous petting.
Oh my god.
Evil language, profanity, cheating, teachers' filthy jokes in classrooms, and pandering to the lusts of the flesh. So, after that, the school kicked him off the campus. So, 2 years later, Phelps and his pregnant wife and their newborn son...
Oh, see, so they're one of those just
yeah.
roll over, do it again kind of
families. They moved to Topeka, Kansas, where he is hired by the Eastside Baptist Church. And then he moves, as Hallie said, to the Westboro Baptist Church on the other side of town in 1955. So, although the new church was supposed to be non-denominational, he sort of was close to a religion called Primitive Baptists, who believe that the Bible is literally true.
Yep, every single thing in it actually happened.
If you ever meet a Bible literalist,
yep.
they're a fucking idiot. And you do not respect their opinion.
Because these are the kind of people who are like, yes, Abraham was 900 years old.
Yeah.
And yes, a guy did live in a whale for 3 weeks.
Yeah. So they're really stupid. Can I say that?
Yeah, you can say it.
Okay.
I don't think we have a lot of, like, extremely religious right people listening to us.
That's fair. And so Primitive Baptists also believe that a predetermined number of people who were selected for redemption before the world was created will be saved on Judgment Day.
The Jehovah Witnesses believe something similar.
Yes. So he alienates all the other church members. So now his church congregation is literally his immediate family and his closest friends. So, I would like to say that he has been, not disowned, what is it, like, condemned by the Primitive Baptists?
Yes, every yeah. version of the Baptists have cut off from them. They said, this is not a part of our church, this yeah. is not a part of our denomination.
So, because obviously his church isn't doing so hot, he has to support himself as a salesman, like, going door to door selling, like, vacuum cleaners and shit, and he forces some of his 13 children to sell candy door to door. Like, that's a fucking recipe for disaster.
That's how you get abused.
So, in 1964, he earns a law degree from Washburn University.
So, anyone can be a lawyer.
He founds Phelps Chartered Law Firm, which also still exists today.
That sounds like Trump University.
Phelps Chartered. I literally found it on Google. There's a bunch of horrible, like, reviews of it. Like, this place should be shut down. It's kind of an ugly building, blah, blah, blah. So the first cases they handle are all civil rights cases.
I wanted to talk about that.
Yes. He claimed to have systematically brought down the Jim Crow laws of Topeka, Kansas.
He is, as I said, we're going to go through a list of all the things he's against later, but strangely, he claims to be anti-racist.
Yeah.
And he was anti-segregation.
He does a lot of work about racism, which is shocking. Like, I was telling my parents about it last night, and my mom's like, what? That makes no sense.
It doesn't at all. It's one of these things is not like the other.
Yeah. So his cases were related to, like, school system racial discrimination and police racial abuse, that kind of thing. He even tried to sue Ronald Reagan at one point for a violation of church and state because Reagan had appointed some U.S. ambassador to the Vatican, but the U.S. District Court threw that case right out. And then we get to his disbarment.
Oh, man.
Okay, so this is pretty fucking crazy, and I have some quotes here for you guys. In 1977, a formal complaint complaint is lodged against him by the Kansas State Board of Law Examiners because of his behavior towards a court reporter named Caroline Brady. She was working with him for some case. He asked her for a transcript by a certain day, and she didn't get it done in time, which it didn't affect the outcome of the case at all, but he sued her for $22,000.
Which is a lot of money back then, even today.
Even today! So these are all quotes. I'm taking this straight from the Wikipedia. So in the ensuing trial, Phelps called Brady to the stand, declared her a hostile witness, and then cross-examined her for nearly a week, during which he accused her of being a slut, tried to introduce testimony from former boyfriends whom Phelps wanted to subpoena, and accused her of a variety of perverse sexual acts, ultimately reducing her to tears on the stand. He lost the case, and according to the Kansas Supreme Court, quote, "The trial became an exhibition of a personal vendetta by Phelps against Caroline Brady. His examination was replete with repetition, badgering, innuendo, belligerence, irrelevant and immaterial matter, evidencing only a desire to hurt and destroy the defendant. The jury verdict didn't stop the onslaught of Phelps. He was not satisfied with the hurt, pain, and damage he had visited on Caroline Brady."
Jesus, so, Mary, and Joseph.
I would say that is, like, the first we see of, like, how fucking nuts this guy is.
Yeah, how did he hide it for so long?
Yeah, right? Okay, so during the appeal, he had affidavits swearing to the court. He had witnesses whose testimony would convince the court, or the jury, in his favor.
Mm-hmm.
How, that was not true. So, he was found to have made, quote, false statements in violation of DR7-102A5, which I'm sure you're aware of.
Oh, of course. This is a law podcast.
I mean, it's not as good as DR7-103A6, but...
Fuck you.
It'll do. So, in 2 years later, he's permanently disbarred from practicing law in Kansas.
Rightfully so.
He's still allowed to practice law in federal courts until 10 years later, following a 4-year complaint against Phelps and 5 of his little Phelps from 9 federal judges for making false accusations against said judges.
Oh my god.
So he had to stop practicing altogether, and 2 of his kids were forced to stop practicing for 6 months and a year, respectively. But in the 1980s, he receives an award. He receives an award, Hallie. Hallie, this man, receives an award from the Greater Kansas City Chapter of Blacks in Government, which is also a shitty name, I have to say.
I was talking with one of my roommates who is black, and she said she really feels that if you're going to call someone by their race, you have to follow it with the word people. Like, you have to say black people or Asian people, otherwise it hits the ear really, really wrong.
Very wrong. And he also receives an award from the Bonner Springs branch of the NAACP for his work on behalf of black clients.
This is so bizarre to me. It's like, you're trying to make a Venn diagram and they keep hitting each other.
Yeah.
Like, how is this man doing this?
So, that was all I wanted to share about Phelps, because he sucks.
That was a very comprehensive history. I really like it.
Thank you. I just really wanted everyone to know about this man, because this cult is a cult of personality based around him.
Oh, absolutely. And I feel like it's probably very easy when you have these qualifications to make people fall in line with what you're saying.
Yeah.
Like, one, not only do you have all these degrees, like, I'm a lawyer, I must know what I'm talking about, I got into West Point, blah, blah, blah. But also, if you are a lawyer, especially a courtroom lawyer, you are trained in arguing and persuasion and just getting people to fall in line with what you're saying.
Mm.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about the Westboro Baptist Church, which he is the head of. We're going to go more into this in the next episode, but...
Yeah.
We're going to start our list here of all the things he is against. They include gay people,
yeah,
Catholics, Muslims, Jewish people, most types of Protestants.
Any Christian that is not part of their specific church is considered evil.
My favorite is he called Catholics vampires.
Hallie!
Yeah, you caught me. But I actually do kind of get his line of reasoning there, because we have that whole thing where it's like, oh, you're drinking someone's blood as part of the service.
Ew.
And he believed that starting in the mid-1950s, when he became the head of the Westboro Baptist Church, that all tragedies in the United States, such as, like, national tragedies, terrorist attack, the Cold War, anything he could get his hand on, was due to the leniency of the United States on LGBT people. he believed that God was punishing us for just how, like, great we were to LGBT people. But I would like to reiterate and remind everyone that he was saying this in 1955. Gay people were still getting arrested on the street if you got caught doing anything gay. They still had to have secret bars that were literally under the streets. Conversion therapy was, like, a recommended thing. Mm. They would electric shock you until you said you weren't gay anymore. Like, Jesus. This, it was madness. Yeah. And he thought we were being too light on people.
Can I also add a couple things? He allegedly may or may not have had a gay experience in his
obviously
life that set him off.
Obviously.
Sometime around that thing where he, like, graduated, was kind of going into the military, but then went to that tent revival meeting. Around that time is he allegedly had some sort of,
Now, see, that's a stereotype that I hate, that all crazy homophobes must be gay themselves, but at a certain point.
Yeah.
At a certain point.
But also, I would like to say that he ran to be, like, maybe a senator or something, like, 5 times. He was a Democrat, Hallie.
Well, actually, that doesn't surprise me, because before the 1960s, the party's ideologies kind of flipped.
No, this was past the 1960s.
Really? Because before the 1960s, the Democrats were very racist. No,
I want to say that this was, I want to say it was like 70s or 80s, but I'm a double check. You keep talking.
Well, that's just insanity to me. Now I'm just kind of stunned. So he believed from the 1950s, and his church still believes today, that the tragedies are caused by gay people being
this
allowed to
exist.
This was
in the 90s.
90s?
Yeah.
Bill Clinton, Democrat.
Yeah, he supported Al Gore in the 1988.
So did my dad!
Because Gore had originally opposed homosexuality.
Oh, Lord.
But then he opposed Clinton and Gore after they flip-flopped on that. But yeah, throughout the 90s, he ran for governor in Kansas.
As a Democrat in Kansas?
Yeah, and he...
That's okay. A really red state, guys.
He received 15% of the vote in 1998. He received 31%. Oh, he ran for U.S. Senate in 1992 and received 31% of the vote. And he ran for mayor of Topeka in 93 and 97.
Good God in heaven.
Yeah. A fucking Democrat.
That is... He's a man of contradictions, which is just very strange to me. And I'm just... Yeah, a lot of us are going to go into later is how they would protest things that they believed... Well, that was interesting to me. They would protest the death of gay people or soldiers or famous people who they believe supported, like, gay people or Catholics or Jewish people. That's another one that you have to say the people behind. There's these 7 verses in the Bible called the Clobber Verses among those in the know.
Clobber?
Clobber Verses. It's really more of a liberal thing, but they're mostly Leviticus. There's one in Timothy. It's these 7 verses in the Bible that are explicitly anti-gay. Like, the ones that the Westboro Baptist Church uses all the time is Leviticus 18:22 and 20:13. And those are the man shall not lie with man. It's an abomination one. But so they use those all the time. And that's just, they put them on their signs. And those are like, we were talking about another cult a while back where they had like specific verses that they based their entire ideology on. And this cult is very similar. And that's these 2 clobber verses from Leviticus that are just... a mess. And the reason they're called that is because people use them as the reason to kill gay people, hence clobber. So that's just another fun thing about the church and its ideology.
I also want to point out that this church is not looking to convert you. Like, yes. Not actively. It's just they think they're warning you. They want you to repent because they think the world is ending. Their protesting isn't them trying to convert you. It's trying to rally you up to convert yourself, basically, so you don't have to go to hell. Which is kind of a weird approach. And by weird, I mean a terrible approach.
They very much confuse me because they seem to be a lot of, not contradictions, but just a lot of things all at once. Like, they're kind of a doomsday cult, but they have no set apocalypse date.
Oh, I have a lovely quote about that.
Oh, do it. Hit us with it.
So this is from a really amazing article in the New Yorker called Conversion via Twitter, and it's all about Megan Phelps Roper.
I read that too. It's a wonderful article.
It's really long, but it is so good.
And is she one of his daughters or one of his granddaughters?
Granddaughters.
So yes, this woman, Megan Phelps Roper, was Fred Phelps' granddaughter. She was raised in the church, obviously.
She was like a huge proponent of it. She was the original Twitter person for the church. She has since left the church. She does a lot of work against the church now. She did a TED Talk recently. She does a lot of interviews.
I'm trying to snap if you hear that sound.
Yeah, she does a lot of interviews. She does a lot. So she's definitely like...
Error of her ways.
She's come to peace with the world and... You know, like, works out a lot. She works out a lot. She works
gets her pump on
a lot against the church now. So this is just a whole paragraph that I stole from the thing. In September 2009, when Phelps Roper began to use Twitter in earnest, Westboro was preparing for the end of the world. Fred Phelps had preached for years that the end was near, but his sermons grew more dire after Barack Obama's election in 2008. Phelps' belief that Obama was the Antichrist.
Of course.
I mean, that's not really original. And that his presidency signaled the beginning of the apocalypse.
She's doing her blowjob motion mm-hmm. she often does.
The sense of looming calamity was heightened by a multi-million-dollar judgment against the church that had been awarded in 2007 to Albert Snyder, who sued Westboro after it picketed the funeral of his son Matt, a U.S. Marine killed in Iraq. Westboro members drew prophecies from the Book of Revelation about how the end might unfold. First, the Supreme Court would overturn the Snyder verdict. The country would be so enraged by Westboro's victory that its members would be forced to flee to Israel. Obama would be crowned king of the world.
I wish.
Then lead every nation in war against Israel. Israel would be destroyed, and only 144,000 Jews who repented for killing Jesus would be spared. Revelation says that 144,000 children of Israel are redeemed from among men. Those are in quotes. Westboro members would lead these converted Jews through the wilderness until Christ returned and ushered them into heaven. Phelps Roper and her family members all got passports so that they could travel to Israel. One day, she was in the grocery store and picked up a container of yogurt with Oreo pieces. She stared at it, thinking, "We won't have modern conveniences like this in the wilderness. Is it better to learn to live without them or to enjoy them while we can?"
She sounds like a barrel of laughs. This whole thing is just, it's interesting to me too that they think Obama is the Antichrist, because you can't help but remember that Obama was our first black president and they were supposedly super anti-racist.
Everyone was against Obama from this day one.
I wasn't, I liked him.
No, not you. I mean, like, people who suck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was just interesting to me. And so next week, we're going to talk about the notable craziness and their specific protests.
I highly, 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 highly recommend this conversion via Twitter article from The New Yorker. You learn so much about it. Like, Megan Phelps Roper talks so much about, like, they were not allowed to be, they were beaten.
Yeah. It was not a chill commune.
It was not. They were beaten by their parents, who considered it, like, it was a very important part of the childhood to, like, beat each other. Obedience was, like, how they summed up the Bible. I think her mother, Shirley Phelps Roper, who we'll talk more
about. Is a piece of work.
She said she could sum up the Bible in three words, obey, obey, obey.
I think I'm getting hives.
Any sort of thought that you had on yourself was considered, like, disobedience, and, like, you were going to go to hell. And so, the article is just chock full of sort of the abuse and brainwashing that this girl had to put up with.
It's so informative, and it is heartwarming, because you do sort of get to see her turn around in the end.
Oh, for sure. You read the journey that she goes on, and, I mean, granted, I thought it was, like, a little, like, it made me uncomfortable reading it, because I'm like, this is definitely, like, a very sympathetic light to her.
Yeah.
Which I understand, because she was in a brainwashing cult since she was...
Born.
She was born into it. But it's also, like, it's just so intense.
Absolutely. So it's a complicated issue. We can talk more about it next time if we want.
So listen to this episode, read that article, and we'll see you next week.
See you guys. Stay excellent.
And don't get in a cult or something.
We're bad at our catchphrases.
I know.
It's okay. We'll overcome.